Good morning.
Good morning.
This morning I want to talk about taking care of things. And it seems like this is an excellent morning for me to be giving this talk because I got here this morning and I found that I had forgotten my talk. So I get to practice with, and really times like this when all of a sudden things go awry and unexpectedly are great times to see where my practice is. Can I see and drop my evaluations about my wonderfulness as a practice leader and talk giver? Can I be calm? So one part of my desire to be peaceful and equanimous is I'd like to dedicate this talk to all of those who are on our Jizo altar. This is the altar of Jizo compassion, where we put cards of people who have died, of people that are ill or in distress in some form, or people who are celebrating joys and blessings. And we usually, on the first Sunday of the month, have a compassion meditation that we share with the community so that we can all hear those names and embrace them and hold them in our hearts. And this morning, we didn't have a chance to do that because I forgot my talk. So hopefully I will be able to teach in the way that I think is most important and effective, and that is to model being at peace with exactly what is. Back to taking care of things. Someone said, one of our teachers, in the midst of the ordinary, one realizes the vastness of this life. One of our ancestors, Dogen Zenji from Japan, said, to study the way is to study the self. And this self is very much the ordinary. The self and what we do every day is where we have exactly the opportunity in each moment to realize the vastness, to touch deeply into the great mystery. But that's not always what happens. And even when we try very hard to do that, we don't always get very far. We get frustrated. So in talking about taking care of things, I want to bring attention to those things that we probably are ignoring as a source of realization, as a source of wisdom and teaching. And that is the things of our life. So our clothes, our chairs, our cups, our dishes, our computers and iPhones, etc. To take care of things, we need to carry respect into every moment. We all want to be respected, and I think probably we all aim to be respectful. Our precepts are filled with the fundamental principle of respect. Don't kill, lie to, steal from, sexually mistreat or intoxicate oneself or others. All forms of fundamental respect. Don't speak disrespectfully. Don't elevate myself while disrespecting others. Don't act out anger. Don't leave anyone out through stinginess or attachment. Don't disrespect the three treasures. So fundamental to each one of our Ten Commandments, as it were, is respect. But we don't usually think of the precepts as applying to our clothing and equipment, our chairs, our cars, our dishes, rocks and fences. We tend to think of people, other sentient beings like animals, sometimes plants. But things like this table or this cup aren't things we necessarily put a lot of energy into respecting. Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, who was one of the ancestors that came from Japan and started the San Francisco Zen Center. Actually, he morphed it into what it is today. There was a San Francisco Zen Center. What he has to say about this is, instead of respecting things, we want to use them for ourselves. And if it is difficult to use them, we want to conquer them. And he says, actually, this eventually leads to fighting. Now that seems a little bit of a stretch, but I don't have any trouble relating to an attitude of wanting to use things and to conquer them. I, for instance, with my robes, I just noticed that when I did this, I had a different sound. Can everybody hear me? Okay. So I have this great spot on my robe. I don't know if I can find it. Let's see. Reveal truth. Down. Yes, here it is. Right here. Here's a spot. Can you see this? This was not respecting things. And so it's right on my front panel, right in the center. It's below where my robe hangs when I don't forget it, which I also did today. So it's a constant reminder to me. I got it while I was in the kitchen at the monastery I spent 3 years in, and we have 3 tubs of water for washing dishes, one of which includes some bleach. So somehow or another, my robe and bleach came together. And I have a patch on this robe. It looks very, it's not something you notice, but it actually exactly looks like the dog ate my raka suit. It has a little. So taking care of things, I got a lesson from Tomoe Katagiri, who is the widow of our founder, Katagiri Roshi. When I went to her, she was also my sewing teacher. And I said, what do I do about this? And she looked at me with this twinkle in her eye, and she said, patch it. So this is an excellent lesson in what do we do about things, taking care of things, especially when we don't take care of things. Well, we begin again, just as we do when we meditate. As soon as we notice that our mind has wandered, we come back to our object of meditation. So as soon as we notice that we haven't been mindful with things, we simply resume trying to be respectful and mindful of things. So in our ignorance, we usually ignore the empty nature of this self, which is, like all things, constructed. If we look carefully at our bodies, we can say, well, this is basically a pile of the 4 elements. We have a very difficult time finding this self that we are so clearly related to. Well, that has implications for things because we're not one bit separate from them. Things are also made up of 4 elements. So in an intellectual kind of way, we can understand we're not actually apart from things. They are, in one way, fundamentally the same thing we are. So when we aim to practice respect for all beings, we're not separate from those beings. So we can feel this in our practice. We don't always tune into it, but it's out there as a little bit of a chatter. So Suzuki Roshi gives a wonderful example when he talked about this and taught about it. He said, when we move chairs, instead of picking them up and moving them and placing them down carefully and gently, we slide them across the floor. That's convenient. Sometimes we do things in a hurry. We'll come home, we're tired, and we take off our clothes and we just drop them where they are. I have two chips in my laptop because I was not being particularly present and mindful with my laptop. And what he points out is that when we do things, which it is our culture to do, because it's convenient or easy, it gives us a kind of lazy feeling. We tend to develop or kind of water a seed of, let's just do things the easy way. And we kind of skip the respect part. We don't feel like we're being particularly disrespectful. We're just doing something for our use. And sometimes, I mean, how do chips get into laptops? Sometimes, as Suzuki points out, this conquering thing comes up. So one of the things that's true about this robe, as a small example, is that if I want to pull up the sleeves, I've got two little strings, and I tie them behind my neck, and then I can tuck them into my belt, and in this way, very respectfully, be mindful of taking this one robe, which if I was a monk would be the only thing that I wear, and protecting it, taking care of it, respecting it. Well, then sometimes I forget that I have my sleeves tied up with little strings and I go to take off my robe. Or I remember, but I just kind of do this thing behind my head where I sort of just pull the knot and then I'm kind of stuck because the knot gets stuck. And then oftentimes there's impatience that arises. And it's like, come on, I'm in a hurry. Or, come on, I want to get over this. You know, or, oh no. So that's how we try to conquer things. And things aren't always ready to be conquered. So we harm them. This is exactly what happens when we're disrespectful in the treatment of anything, the earth or people. This is not a respectful way to treat things. The shoving of things across the floor with disregard for noise or floor or chair. It's not the spirit of our practice. It's not the spirit of the precepts. And we can find this disrespectful, lazy feeling slips into the way we treat ourselves and other people. We can't treat things with disregard and mindlessness and have that not sneak into how we treat ourselves and other people or things on the earth, like plants and animals. And when we use things for ourselves or try to conquer them, essentially, we're treating things like slaves. And they're not our slaves. They have a life of their own. or they have this life with us. So when we treat things like slaves, it becomes easier to treat people like slaves, or plants, or minerals and resources. Likewise, when we do take care to respectfully handle things, when we pick up the chair and carefully place it, then we have a feeling of practice. Suzuki Roshi says, when we do this, when we practice this way, we ourselves are Buddha, and we respect ourselves. To care for the chairs means our practice goes beyond the zendo. It has taken me a long time personally to truly understand that this moment is a refuge, and that when I practice the precepts and I practice mindfully and respectfully, I can be totally comfortable in this life. Truly comfortable in this life. I'm a person like many humans who's restless, and I get easily agitated. I get anxious. I think into the future and worry about things. I get irritable. And it's taken me a long time to realize that this seeming addition to my life, this practice, this extra thing that I keep thinking I have to do, instead of this way of being with things as they are and living peacefully, that it's a refuge and it's always available to me, that it's always It's always here, but unless it's practiced, it doesn't appear. Robert Aiken Roshi says, in another way, the same thing. What or where you are not just yourself anymore. You include all. This practice of respecting everything requires strong effort. It's not something that we'll do naturally, particularly in this culture. And it's quite remarkable to ourselves and to others when we do practice this respect for all things in every moment. This all and every may feel a bit daunting. Requires effort mostly to remember, but we can feel that we have the practice in our body, and therefore we have the practice with it. Oftentimes at the end of talks, when we do Q&As, people are wondering, well, how can I take this practice into my life? We all have that question. This is really good. I'm feeling some joy. I'm feeling some peace. I want to take this into every moment. The way we do that is we be that. We be that. And a simple way to think about that is we be respectful. And for a lot of us, certainly single people, we may not have that much contact with people during the day. We may have a lot more contact with things than we have with people. So they are always with us, and we are always interbeing with them. And when we remember that, that is a refuge. So this may sound like, well, now we have to learn all these special rules for treating things carefully. even though we have those here at the center. So for instance, for a while, whenever we did service, and particularly during our retreats, we didn't want to be taking, for our convenience and for the flow, chant books from the storage place to the cushions all the time. So we started storing them underneath the cushions. And then we observed that we needed to replace binders, and they were starting to crack and get smushed, because when you stomp all over and sit on a binder, that's what happens. And we realized this is not very respectful. So we spent some time and a good deal of discussion and experimentation studying this. Well, how can we have a flow? How can we be respectful with these chant books? So now what we do is we usually put them on the cushions. And we don't always keep them there, because when you spend a whole day in a sesshin meditating, there's lots, you know, it's sort of like your house. You've got your cushions, you got your chewing gum, you got your, you know, your iPhone that's on vibrate, you know, whatever it might be. If we think that what we're doing is trying to memorize all the rules for how to treat things, then we're going to have trouble. We'll put forth effort, but it may not be in a very effective, helpful way. If we remember that we need to treat ourselves and others and things with respect, and we simply aim in that direction, and we put our attention into actually studying what seems to help, then respect will appear, as will the Dharma, as will interbeing. Our Sangha puts forth a great effort to make a beautiful place for all of us to practice and for us to receive teachings so that we can realize peace in our lives. And we have in our vision that we want to be a welcoming place. Is there anybody in the room right now who's here for the first time? Okay. So one of the things we intend to do respectfully is to make anyone who comes in the door feel welcome. And part of what makes people feel welcome is knowing they're in a place where care is taken for them and all things. And the things in this place, when we walk in, you can look around and you can see the respect. You can see, whether you know that you're taking it in or not, you can feel it, the body knows it, your eyes see it, your ears hear it. So really the greatest beauty in our Zen center is the people who practice here. And we are not separate from that practice. So this isn't about there's practice and there's me. There's how do I lift up a cup of tea? How do I greet someone? What do I do with my shoes? As people who practice here and know the center and know some of the forms that we've learned as a way of expressing respect and care, we're leaders for those who are new. Ideally, they have only to look at us to know how to practice, to follow along with what we do, because our actions teach them the practice. When we practice respect for all things, and this is something that I encourage you to investigate, As many of you know, the Buddha said, don't believe me just because I seem like a good guy and I'm teaching wise things. Go out and find for yourself. And that's because when you get into a bind, like you forget your talk or whatever it might be, unless you have some experience in your body and direct knowledge, it's not necessarily going to hold up very well in a stressful situation to say, well, the Buddha said, do this. If you do it, then you know in your bones. Know in your bones. I'm smiling because I'm remembering going kayaking in the Apostle Islands and going out on the first day and the first leg of the trip in expedition canoes, and I had my life vest on, and I had my, you know, I had my wetsuit on because it's Lake Superior and it never gets warmer than 40 degrees. But we only had to go 2 miles just across to a little place. We're going to go over on the leeward side and camp on the beach that night. Well, it turned out that it took a long time to get there because a storm rose up and we ended up being in 5-foot waves. Now, the good thing about kayaking is you're kind of like a duck. So it feels like you're a duck. You're that close to the water, and when the waves go up, you go up, and when the waves go down, you go down. But there were rocks and things like directions, like trying to go in the right direction for long enough to get where we were going. And I think the reason this came up is because in that moment, I started chanting the refuges. I take refuge in Buddha. I take refuge in Dharma. That was what I had chanted as I sewed my robes. That is what I had been chanting every morning as part of my practice. And because I had it in my body, because I had direct experience, it was right there for me. And it took me literally all the way into the beach. It was a great comfort. I just thought, well, paddle and take refuges. That's all I'm going to do right here. I highly recommend it. When we practice respecting all things, we feel it in our body. We feel practice. We know it's with us. And we can trust ourselves, and others trust us. So I've certainly heard from people that when they were new, there was just a certain kind of peace when they walked in the door. I have a very vivid experience of an art crawl in our other location where a woman came in a hot day and she was clearly agitated and she said, oh, it's so nice in here. Can I just sit and be quiet? And I thought, what a wonderful thing that we could be here at just the time when she needed this. So Suzuki is a great way of describing this trusting ourselves and others trusting us. And I thought I could relate to a feeling inside of myself, but he put it beautifully. He said, we are all just like babies in the laps of our mothers. And when I'm in my practice, when I'm not being helter-skelter, or even when I am being helter-skelter, and I remember practice, then I'm home. I'm safe. Now, I don't want to give the impression that I always trust the practice. I don't. A lot of times I think, I need to conquer a particular situation or a particular thing or a particular person. But more and more, I know the feelings of not practice and practice. And part of what allows me to do that is the continuity that comes with remembering that I can practice with everything as well as every person. Suzuki Roshi says that when we put effort into studying how to help people with respectful treatment, which we need to do, it's not always easy to know what's respectful. Usually we can get some feel in our body for when something, you know, we get this kind of queasy feeling. That's what Byakaran talks calls the barking dog. So when we're attuned, we kind of have this little red flag or this, you know, little, it's like a sound from the iPhone or something like that. I'd love to have a barking dog sound now that I think about it on my iPhone. That would be great. Just set it to go on a loop, you know, just, that'd be great. So Suzuki says that basically when we're in our practice and we're putting forth strong effort to study, how do I take care of this moment, this moment, this moment, then we know how. We find that we know how to treat people, and we know how to treat nature, and we know how to treat things. And we know how to treat ourselves, which is oftentimes something that's one of our most difficult problems. You know, it's like we don't take care of ourselves. And we talk about the ways of taking care of ourselves in this culture that can be a little confusing around that. We tend to think of that as, well, that means massages and baths and sleeping and, you know, eating healthy and exercising maybe are on that list, but they might come further down the list. But we kind of know when we don't trust ourselves. You know I get a queasy feeling when I'm operating in a way, well, I think I'll just stay up until midnight and watch this one movie that I took out of the library. I kind of already know that's not such a good idea. And then I do it. And then I say, oh, that's not such a good idea. This is why studying the self is such an important element. Becoming very intimate with how that develops, how it fruits, and essentially getting sick of it. Just getting sick of not being able to rely on ourselves to act respectfully, to treat this body respectfully and this mind and heart. When we respect chairs and clothing and dishes, we find their true nature, their power and their beauty, which is essentially to say, we see Buddha. We are the eyes of Buddha. We touch the great mystery. When we see the true nature and power and beauty of things, it's our true nature, it's our power, it's our beauty. I think we've all had the chance in our lives that more than once to suddenly be struck by beauty. I think it's one of the deep charms of nature, and certainly one of the deep charms of this state that has so much physical beauty in so many different forms. As Eiken Roshi says, at that time, we are not ourselves anymore. We include all. So, before I ask for comments, questions, or anything else you'd like to share or say, I want to say, when you receive an invitation from the Jikido Ryo to be part of a Saturday temple work day, bring your children and family members and learn about working together, silently absorbed in an intimate meditation with floors and toilets and dishes and dusty surfaces of the thingness of this place. Let your bodies and mind and heart experience deeply interbeing with plastic and metal and wood and air and space. And after an hour or two, perhaps, you will leave with a sense of quiet joy and great wonder, marveling at the largeness of this alive moment that is always present in these seemingly invisible, ordinary tasks we call chores. You know, when we had a painting sort of week, and we told people, we need to get certain things painted before we can finish this building. Many people came, some for not very long, some ready for every day. And almost universally, it was a joyful experience. People said, wow, that was really fun. That was really great. I really connected with people. So this is not some elusive promise. This is something that you can experience when you do it with your family at home and when you do it with this family here. I urge you to accept the invitation of things in all of your life, to relinquish your infatuation with this self as best you can, and enjoy the ease and contentment of truly interbeing. So we have a little time. One of our favorite parts is hearing from people, what they have to say, what they have to ask. Yes. Adam, you're welcome.
Brought up some things that I've been working on in my practice, and both the respect about respecting things, and I try hard to respect things, but I don't always, and sometimes I can be kind of lenient on myself. I'm like, oh, I was, you know, in a rush, like you said, but then I find when other people sometimes aren't, there tends to be some anger that comes up. And then I recognize that, but I try to block the anger because I go, oh, that's not being compassionate. So I kind of get into a struggle with that. And then I become more agitated because I'm trying to block the anger, and it kind of just goes on until I maybe forget about it, or I realize what's going on. And I think trying just to be with the anger when it comes up and not trying to block it is something that I'm really working on. I just wanted to hear that.
Well, thank you. Maybe you should say woof woof when you when that happens, because what you're doing is exactly the practice. But to not run away from things, to really develop the capacity to be with exactly what is, as it is, without evaluation or judgment, is a multi-lifetime of work. So keep on. Yes?
Actually, just a comment for you. I have a 3.5-year-old toddler. She's angry a lot. So get these waves. That's what I get, the grunts or the kicking or the waving my arm, like, just go get the ball. Hit the ball. If you want to hit, it's okay, but don't hit the chair, don't hit mama. Because he has a bouncing ball that has a handle on it.
Oh.
And he, like, takes it and just slams it on the board. Like, hit the ball, get the anger out, and then you'll feel all better. And so I think it really works. I think it really figured out a way to get it out. I've tried to tell him, don't be angry, but that doesn't actually work. So I reversed the ball method, and then she looks better.
Well, yeah, it's very difficult and subtle practice to really stay with ourselves. The fundamental practice is stay close, do nothing. And most of us are actually probably better at taking care of other people than we are of ourselves. Because it's hard to stay with that much energy. And the other thing I want to appreciate about what you're saying, what's your name, by the way?
Maria.
Is this, it kind of shed some light on, well, what's respectful treatment? All right, so how's the ball feeling about this? Well, we have, nothing's excluded, so where there's black, there's also white. You know, where there's mindfulness, there's also non-mindfulness. It's all out there. And it's all okay in some ways, simply because it is. You know, that's the deal. It is. We don't really get to vote. It just is. And so I think we have the wonderful teaching of the Buddha about the earth. And he uses it as a metaphor when he says, you know, the earth has the capacity to receive. So you can pee on the earth, doesn't faze it. You know, you can pee in the ocean, doesn't faze it. You know, that, so this sense of capacity is something that you're teaching your 3.5-year-old, right? It's sort of like he's in his stage of learning how to hold strong emotions. And you're doing the same thing. And it's, I think probably everybody in this room puts a good deal of effort into that. But it's, so it's subtle, this respectfulness thing, you know, to use a ball sort of, in a sense, with its consent. It's,
I think it's meant for balancing.
Exactly. 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 Who else wants to say something? Tom? Right.
And the same thing goes for any instrument.
That's nice.
So, but if you sort of caress it, then it seems it's soft. And I think that's true. There really aren't any things. It's just a whole universe. And we're really dancing as part of it. And so if you think of them as being, give us something to bring to you that we can do. It works well. Now, that's what I live like now.
Right. So just for the listening audience on tape, that was a beautiful example with musical instruments, which we have some of here in our drums and our bells. We can hear. We can hear the harmony when we strike them in a way that's harmonious, when we are inviting them and coming together, because really, those things can't play their music without us. So thank you for that beautiful, beautiful metaphor. And Carol Iwata, Madam Chair.
Tom reminded me that when, before I first served as a timekeeper for a silent retreat, the offering gave me a lesson in how to strike the bell, the large bell here. She said, you invite the bell to sound. And I have just thought about that whenever I use not just the sacred objects here, but musical instruments or whatever. So there is that. Actually, what your talk brought to mind is that there's a woman in Japan, Marie Kondo, who has become somewhat famous for, I think what I hear about her a lot is people learning to fold their clothes, or her system for helping people to decide what possessions they're going to keep, what objects they're going to keep, and which ones they will part with. And what I almost never hear about is the teaching that is central to her method, which is that, for example, if you're trying to decide about clothes, you bring all the clothes in your house into one place. You take each one of your clothes, your dirty socks, your torn underwear, you know, your favorite t-shirt, you hold each one and you thank it for what it has contributed to your life and the joy that it has brought. And then the decision you make is, does this still bring joy to my life, or is it time to let it go? So I think that the teaching about the oneness of self and each object in our lives is the central part of what she's talking about.
That's lovely. Do you remember the title of the book, Carol?
The Life-Teaching Magic of Kindness.
Thank you.
The life-changing magic of tidying up.
And I think it's the intervening part that's life-changing to me, not how my thoughts are now in spiral.
Yes. Well, things have a lot to teach us, actually. We had somebody that talked to Sashin about learning stillness from a rock. And I oftentimes learn things in my body from hanging out with trees. Who else? There was somebody, there was a hand over here. How are we doing? We're good. We're still good. Yes.
So your talk kind of reminded me of a situation at work where they have a program where they invite like the high school kids to come in for a couple weeks to get exposure. So when I heard about that and I had to be in charge of such a person, I thought, well, geez, when I was that age, I never had a chance, like a job like this, but I'll do my best. And sure enough, everything is fine. But the person kind of, being their age, and I cut them slack, every time I see them, they go, you got a pen, you got this, you got, so they kind of are demanding of me. Mm-hmm. So that kind of pulls at my ego weeds, so to speak. But from, you know, practice, I kind of was able to watch the whole thing. And so I think they might unintentionally not be respecting me, but I feel that I made effort in respecting them by not giving them a big haughty response back or try to correct what they're doing, because they're only so young and they're passing through anyways. So anyways, your talk kind of reminded me of that situation. So.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's a great example of the subtleties of respect.
Yeah.
And it's also a great example of being able really to see the Buddha in other people, however unskillful they may be. So thank you for that.
But the Dharma in the workplace is a great, the Dharma has really helped me in the workplace. Whereas I saw myself years ago, I would be more prone to get mad or this or that, but mm-hmm. I think I have much more equilibrium now with the different situations.
That's nice. So, that's nice. Thank you. Well, let's call that good for this Sunday. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Chris.
Is taking care of business, is it also includes correcting someone of their impression of me?
Well, that's the question was, does being respectful of all things include correcting someone's impression of you? And I think that if we're trying to change their mind, maybe the best way to approach that, at least to begin with, and we need to study this for this particular person and for us, is to be who we are.
Well, an example is my sister is a fundamentalist Christian.
Uh-huh.
And so she comes to me and makes comments, very easy comments. She thought that I was still a Catholic.
Ah.
So when the issue of the gay marriage came up in the Supreme Court, she said that the United States is not controlled by Satan. And she would say this to me because believing that I'm still believing in Satan. You know,
uh-huh, yes.
So I said, I do not believe in you. I know that I think it's Kennedy who tipped the balance. You tip the balance, you know, that he didn't agree with you. And I believe Kennedy is a man of religion. You know, I just said that. I just wanted her to say that she can't call me or say this to me anymore because it would just go into a wall. You know, otherwise, you know, and I apologize to the person. But I don't believe in this anymore. So that's it, and I ended it there. Is that taking care of business?
Well, of course it is, especially because it's your intention. I think the intention, when the intention's respect, so whenever we have a strong situation that activates our energy, our emotions, and that can easily happen when we get a strong difference between people, then nonviolence really calls for some depth and understanding where the other person's coming from, as well as some a respectful way of presenting our feelings and our faults, where we're taking responsibility for and holding what our stuff is about. Usually that kind of a difference comes with some amount of evaluation and story. Not always, okay? So the situations are subtle. And we're not, you know, we're always in a different place depending on when we hear that. But if we have the intention of how can I receive respectfully and without judgment what this other person is saying, how can I put forth my truth in a respectful way, then automatically our effort is there. And as Caldeguri would say, so we do our best to drop attachment, to look carefully at our experience and do something, and then observe it, accept it, and learn from it. So that's really, it's hard to know in any given situation where we really got what we want. But if what we're doing in that communication is trying to get somebody to do something, they'll hear that. Whereas if we're honestly, respectfully listening to their point of view and honestly and respectfully presenting our point of view, we're much more likely to have a heart connection.